Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, November 29th, 2016. With me today from the MacCast, Adam Christensen. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, and it's always great to get to hang out with you on a show, just like it's always great to get to hang out with John Martellaro. How are you, John?
I am good. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, John.
Yeah, and you guys sound great. And for our listeners, here's a little bit background info. This is the very first test I've done with recording a show on my brand new Touch Bar MacBook Pro. I've been using the computer for about 5.5 hours now, and so
you just had to brag, right?
And I just had to brag, and it's also a little bit of me sharing warning. The trepidation that I have that this is actually going
warning
to work.
In case things go horribly wrong.
Right. I mean, I already started off with having to reset up all of my inputs because this isn't the same computer. An Audio Hijack just didn't
knows that.
Yeah. So anyhow, I'm. Yes, there's a little bit of bragging, but also a little bit of, crap, I hope this works. All right. Well, I guess if people are hearing it, we know it worked. The reason I wanted you guys here today is because there's been this discussion going around the internet and mainstream media and on blogs about the whole thing with bringing jobs and production into the United States. In some cases, that would be bringing jobs back, and in other cases, that would be actually creating new jobs. And and one of the things that has come up more than once is Apple bringing production into the United States, and they've done this on a small scale. The Mac Pro is made in the United States. Some iMacs are made in the United States, but there's been talk at all different levels about whether or not Apple could bring the iPhone production into the United States.
Right.
And so there's this argument about, yeah, Apple could totally do it, and an argument saying, nope, can't happen. And what I find interesting is that part of the argument against Apple being able to bring production into the United States is that it would raise the cost of an iPhone prohibitively.
Yeah, some people are saying up to double. I mean, they're trying to allude it would more than double the cost. So we are almost double, I guess. I think there was a piece that I saw over, I believe it was on CNET, where they were doing some back of the envelope math, and I think said it would be about $1,300 for an unlocked iPhone versus, what is it, about now, $800, $600 to $800, mm-hmm. something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, some crazy prices being thrown out.
And, you know, the crazy price thing, okay, I can see where that would be really concerning because my iPhone already costs a lot of money. I don't
right.
want to have to pay the same for an iPhone that I would pay for say, a MacBook. That just seems kind of crazy. What I'm feeling, and keep in mind, I haven't even ever played a financial analyst on stage, let
right.
alone do this in real life. The real barrier to me doesn't seem to be that it would cost too much, but instead that we don't have the infrastructure in this country to actually produce iPhones on the scale that Apple needs.
Right. Right. The reason I kind of got into this and started following this was there was a lot of people throwing out this idea that it was purely the labor costs. And that was irking me a little bit because there's a lot more factors to that. But even more what sort of got me going on this was that Apple has at least on two occasions, two different CEOs that I'm aware of said that the labor costs were not why Apple didn't do manufacturing in the U.S. And what you're alluding to, Jeff, was sort of more of their point. So I think in 2012, President Obama visited Silicon Valley and he had a dinner with a lot of business leaders, including Steve Jobs. And reportedly, sources that were at that meeting heard Obama ask Jobs, you know, what would it take to get iPhones produced in the U.S.? And he said the main reason that Apple couldn't do it and preferred China was the flexibility, diligence, and industrial skills of foreign workers versus U.S. workers. And there's a lot to be talked about what he meant by, you know, flexibility and diligence. But it basically comes down to, you know, we don't have company towns like they do. You know, you don't have a third of your workforce working at the factory. You can't go wake someone up in the middle of the night and say, look, we need to ramp up right now and bring them in. That's just something we don't do here anymore for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. And, you know, without getting into the arguments of good, bad, or the other, it's just that was one of the things. And the other thing that was mentioned was the industrial skills, the vocational skills. And Steve alluded to that, but then in 2015, Tim Cook did an interview with 60 Minutes where he was basically asked the same sort of question. And his direct answer was that Apple can't manufacture in the U.S. because we lack the vocationally skilled workers. And what he means by that is workers that have a high school education or a high school diploma, but not necessarily a college degree. So it's those people that are doing, you know, 2-year type of jobs, and specifically ones that can work on the machines, because a lot of this stuff is automated. The people who can build and work on the machines, the tool and die makers, the people who would apprentice with somebody in the past, we don't focus on that in this country anymore. And that's a huge focus in other countries and in other regions.
Okay. Yeah, that fits with what I'm feeling. When you said the company town,
right?
That totally nailed it, I think, because, well, in China,
that's the flexibility part. Yeah, you get out of your cot and you're going to work in 10 minutes.
Yeah, and I mean it's important to note that in China, the numbers that I've seen is that about a third at Foxconn, they have about a third of their workers who are actually on site, on campus, in mm-hmm. those dorms. So it's not their entire workforce, which is huge. I mean, and that's another one of these nuanced things. It's just the sheer volume of workers and the ability to hire workers more quickly. I mean, another fact that was pointed out, I believe, around the Steve Jobs thing is they asked some experts and stuff like that about this ability to scale up and down and it being difficult in the work in the U.S. And it's the size of that workforce that has that skill set that I just mentioned. You know, they can hire 3,000 workers, skilled workers, in Japan, or in China, rather, in about 24 hours. They did this. They had to go out and find workers. They found 3,000 people in 24 hours. And it was pointed out that to do something similar, oh, I take it back. I'm getting my numbers wrong. So it was in 2012, Apple needed to hire 8,700 industrial engineers to oversee the 200,000 assembly line workers in China. So we're talking about, again, not necessarily the line workers being the people that we wouldn't be able to find in the U.S. It's the skilled engineers that oversee and sort of work above those people. They found and hired 8,700 industrial engineers in China in 15 days. And many analysts and experts pointed out that to do the same thing in the U.S. would take about 9 months.
Wow.
So that's what they're talking about when they're talking about sort of flexibility and the ability to scale. The other thing, and this wouldn't fly in the U.S. very well either, is they also ramp down that quickly. And could you imagine, you know, what the reaction in this country would be if you suddenly you hired, you know, 8,700 workers and then turned around and months later let them all go?
Oh, yeah, that would be a PR disaster. You'd see reports.
It's not in our culture, you know, and so there's cultural things going on here. There's just so many nuances to this. But, you know, getting back to sort of what started me on this is just the idea that it would double the cost of the phone. And most other reports and things that I've looked at related to this, they estimate the additional, just if you're looking at the labor costs would add to the cost of an iPhone, $65 to $75 per unit, which is not insignificant. I mean, that's not money that Apple would want to readily give up or get rid of, mm-hmm. you know. But when you're talking about that amount of money, you can imagine that there's possible other areas, especially if government and tax incentives were thrown in, where those that cost could be offset. You know, if it was truly what some others are alluding to, that it would completely double the cost of a phone, you know, there's that's harder to see how you could potentially offset that. And then the other thing to remember about bringing stuff to the U.S. that I think people forget about is it sounds great and everything, but largely that unskilled labor force, the assembly line workforce, that's going to be mostly robots. And we've seen that in Apple's U.S. factories that they have.
My favorite subject.
Yeah. Yeah, robots. And I read a report from one analyst that said, you know, robots could do a lot of those jobs. It would cost about $40,000 per robot up front. But that robot operates at that point forward for about $1 a day. And guess what? It can be run 24 hours, not the 8 to 12-hour shift.
Well, you know, that's what the United States does best. We're a nation of white-collar workers. We're transitioning out of an industrial age into a computer age and robotic age and AI age. A lot of people who are unemployed were perhaps in the auto industry displaced by robots, or coal mines or steel industry, who would like to have their old jobs back in the steel mill. And those jobs are never coming back again because of the change in our industrial base.
Right.
And so there is this political imperative to tell people that, you know, we can change things so that people can go to back to work in the coal mines and go back to work in the steel mills. And then that translates into the idea of bringing manufacturing back to the United States in a highly advanced tech industry. And that doesn't work for all the reasons you just discounted.
I think there's a middle ground here that could. And again, you know, this is not something that's happening overnight. It's not, in my opinion, something that probably may never happen. You know, I don't know. That's just pure conjecture and opinion on my point. You know, is it, I guess the way I saw this is, you know, could it be done? Could you bring this manufacturing back to the U.S.? Absolutely, yes. Would it be easy? And more importantly, is it smart? You know, should we be doing it? Those are more nuanced questions that are a lot harder to answer.
We could do it with a high level of robotization, which in turn wouldn't solve the employment problem.
Well, it would on one level, though. Again, you have to remember what Apple is talking about. You know, 8,700 industrial engineers. It's not huge. It's not as big as people would like to see with, you know, like assembly line workers or lower level workers. But it would generate a new need for this vocational skill set that we have marginalized. So you could take some of those people and train them up into, you know, hands-on. You need people that can fix the machines, that can retool the dies when Apple makes a design change, that can get in there and do some lower level engineering type work. So, you know, there is that element to it.
It also would take a long, long time to do the transition, and Apple, if they did, it would probably do it in stages.
Correct. Yeah,
they would probably do one model of the phone or one model of the iPad and ramp up, and it would probably happen over a 5-year period.
Well, and again,
the learning curve.
And there has to be a lot of other things that happen, a lot of other incentives. And, you know, that's another thing that had been going on in China. And so the other interesting thing, the argument that will come up when people start talking about this, is supply chain. And I found this fascinating when I started digging into this, is that I know there's this big argument. Well, all the supply chain is in China. You know, Apple can, if they need to change something, the guys that make the, you know, widget B that goes into the main device, they're right around the corner. You know, they're right there. And you start talking about shipping costs and parts delays and, you know, how long does it take to get something if we were doing this in the U.S. and having to ship all these parts over here, how long would that take? Because there's this perception that most of the component parts that go into the phone are right there. You know, that it's close by. Huh. It's a supply chain issue. And I thought this logically made sense to me. And I started looking into this and found a report, a supply chain study that was done by the National University of Ireland and the University of China. And they determined that more than half of the components that go into Apple's products are actually imported into China And of those, the critical, what they call the core technology components, most of those were not from Chinese companies. They found that China accounted for only about 4% of the component parts, and that most of them, 32%, came from China, and almost 30%, 28.5%, were actually coming from the U.S.
Okay, things so like the Qualcomm and modems and things like
the
that.
Qualcomm modems, the chips that are made in, you know, the 8 series processors, some of which I believe, I don't know if all of them are made in Texas. You know, but then there's the other nuances that, you know, there's a lot of political things happening in China, and China is not giving some of the incentives and things that they had been. You know, labor, real estate, and energy costs are going up. They're getting a growing middle class. It's actually becoming more expensive to manufacture in China than some other countries like Indonesia, Thailand, Mexico, and even India, which is why you're seeing Foxconn with a very big interest of building a plant in India, which they're working on right now.
Right. And they also built a plant in Brazil.
Yep.
Yep.
I think that one didn't quite work out as they had wanted. But, you know, so that's the other thing about, if we're talking about the U.S. thing, the other nuance is that there has to be big incentives, because these other countries are making big incentives to try and get this manufacturing from China as well. So there's competition going on also.
All right. So the takeaway I'm getting out of this is that there's not, in the grand scheme of things, a big financial barrier keeping iPhones from being produced in the United States.
There's not a labor financial barrier. I think there's other nuanced, you know, things that I haven't had much opportunity to look into deeper. But yeah, I would agree with that. And also, supply chain may not be the problem.
Yeah, which is surprising to me, because I assumed, like so many people, that the supply chain was all, for the most part, localized. So you cranked out parts for one element of the phone, and they got trucked down the street where they need to go.
Yeah, a lot of the non-critical parts, you know, like I think like screws and other sorts of things, yes. But it, you know, from again this study that I found, a University of Ireland and University of China, it's indicating no, that's not going on. And I, you know, so it was fascinating to me to find that.
All right, well, we're pretty much out of time, but right before we wrap up, John, your eyes always light up when you start talking about the robotics aspect of things like this. And I'm curious, do you think that we could build up the robotic infrastructure to produce iPhones on the scale that we need in the United States?
I think so, and it's already being done. I read an article a while back about how Foxconn itself was building robots.
Yep.
To augment and supplement some of its workers. Eventually, these devices will all be built by robots, and the United States is well positioned in its AI industry and our robotics industry to hire a lot of white collar people to be designing these systems. So you won't be getting a job on the assembly line. You'll be getting a job in an office where you'll be writing the code that drives the robots and develops the AI agents that build the machinery. So those are the jobs that I think are going to be opening up dramatically in the next decade.
And also the skilled labor force and workers that need to do maintenance and tool parts and, you know, keep those robots running.
Right. Yeah, that's where our workforce lies.
All right. Well, now I guess we're in that wait and see mode where we watch and see what Apple does about iPhone production. Excuse me, if they're going to try and bring any of it into the United States, and what impact that has on our phone prices.
Yeah, I think the other important thing to remember is that Apple is interested in doing that. Obviously, as you pointed out very early in this conversation, they did that with certain products and devices. So what's positive to me about this is I don't think Apple is adverse to any of this stuff if we can make find ways to make the economics make sense for businesses. And that's the biggest question, right? Especially as we're in a transition period with our government. You know, what is going to happen? And some pretty big, bold statements are being made. And they seem way out there, but they're not necessarily outside the realm of possibility, you know. But it's so much more nuanced than I think a lot of the media. Everybody's trying to distill it down to that one thing. And I think that's the biggest frustration I was happening. It's like, you know, it's not that simple. Like everything in life, you know, there's much more nuance and complexity to this. And that's why it ultimately ends up, it's not going to happen overnight. You know, it's right. going to be a, if it ever happens, it's going to be a long, arduous, slow process, just like the exit was. You know, all this stuff didn't move to China overnight either, you know, and having it come back is going to be just as slow and tedious, I think.
I agree, Adam.
All right. Well, with that, we are out of time, so we're going to have to wrap up. Adam, thanks so much for joining me today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And John, thank you for being here as well.
Hey, you're very welcome. It's a pleasure.
It's always great to get to talk with both of you. Listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.